Good day, everyone, and a warm welcome to another edition of The Debate, coming your way from Press TV headquarters in Tehran. I'm your host, Behruz Najafi. More than a year into the U.S. unilateral pullout from the Iran nuclear deal, Tehran has announced its stockpile of low-enriched uranium has gone beyond the 300-kilo cap. Foreign Minister Zarif says Iran has clearly said what it will do, and it's part of Tehran's right under JCPOA. Now, this in reaction to European countries' failure to comply with their commitments within the multilateral agreement, and also Washington's reimposition of sanctions on Tehran. Where is the Iran nuclear deal heading for? Will Europe be able to save it? Let's discuss various aspects of the issue in tonight's program after watching a background report.
Iran has announced that its enriched uranium stockpile has exceeded the 300 kilograms limit set by the 2015 nuclear agreement. The news was also confirmed by the International Atomic Energy Agency. The move comes following a previously announced plan by the Islamic Republic to reduce its commitments under the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action. Iran's Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif said decreasing commitments would not be limited to exceeding uranium reserves, explaining that the measures are taken within the framework of the JCPOA.
The first phase of this timetable regarding the stockpile of uranium and heavy water is being implemented. We'll also implement the next phase, which concerns increasing enrichment level to beyond the current level of 3.67.
Scaling back the commitments comes in response to the U.S. hostile behavior and the European countries' weak actions to save the nuclear agreement. In May 2018, the United States unilaterally withdrew from the accord and reimposed sweeping sanctions on Iran's economy. Since then, the European signatories to the deal pledged to keep the accord going and allow Tehran to bypass Washington's sanctions. Britain, France, and Germany also set a mechanism for financial transactions with Iran called INSTEX as part of their efforts to salvage the deal. But Iran says that's not enough and the EU needs to do more. Iran's oil minister Bijan Zangane said without the oil money, the mechanism won't work. Analysts believe that the Europeans might be willing to save the deal, but they don't have enough power to do so.
I think Europe may be willing to try to salvage the deal, but I'm not sure they are able. You know, the problem is the U.S. has such a massive economy and obviously a massive military. The U.S. really is able to dictate how things go in terms of the international economy.
The IAEA has verified Iran's adherence to the nuclear deal for 15 times. With the U.S. withdrawal and Europe's inaction to save the agreement, Iran seems to be the only party living to the terms of the deal. It's now up to Europe to take more serious steps towards saving the deal and convince Iran to backtrack from reducing its commitments.
Now, after that report, let's start tonight's debate, beginning with former American intelligence linguist Scott Rickert, joining us out of Tampa, Florida. Good to have you with us, Scott. The IAEA, as you know, has issued 15 reports in which it's endorsed Iran's full compliance with the 2015 nuclear deal. Now, what about Europe? Has it done its share of the deal?
Well, Europe has absolutely not abided by the deal. Obviously, the United States certainly has not abided by the deal. So far, only China and Russia out of the P5 plus one have abided. Obviously, when it comes to Germany, France, and the United Kingdom, they're bound by their ties to NATO, and they're also bound by their ties to the Western banking infrastructure, whereby the financial types of really espionage that's going on, and obviously the kinds of backdoor agreements that are being done to oversee the thwarting of this agreement by the nations in Europe. This type of just tremendous amounts of activities that have gone on behind closed doors, surreptitiously dealings that have been financially constraining the ability of Europe to actually cooperate not only with Iran, but also cooperate in an international scale. That's unfortunate because the kinds of economic espionage that's going on here is tremendous. It's what the Americans and the British have done for quite some time, and I believe that they're actually holding the Germans hostage in this situation, because obviously France, the United Kingdom, and the United States have been working in tandem for quite some time, whereby Germany, unfortunately, is being held to the fire and being the third party out, so to speak, of this agreement. Now, that being said as well, Instex has just been implemented. It was far too little too late. And I think that the move that Iran has taken to say that, look, if no one's going to abide by this deal, we're going to move forward to do whatever we wish. And if you're willing to bring back the agreement and abide by the agreement, we're happy to roll back and abide by the JCPOA.
Exactly. We'll come to Instex at a later point, Scott. But Iranian Foreign Ministry has also announced that the country plans to suspend other commitments under the deal in a matter of 7-8 days unless European powers take practical and tangible steps. And I'm quoting the Foreign Ministry, to implement their new mechanism, Instex, to shield the Iranian economy from the effects of the U.S. sanctions. Now, Tehran is saying it will reverse its decision as soon as the European side abides by its obligations. Now, is Europe willing, or let's say able, to do so, to salvage the deal?
Unfortunately, I don't believe that Europe is actually able. I believe that many people are willing, but when it comes to the word able, you have to take into consideration the financial constraints that would be placed upon the European Union by the United States. This is what I mean by holding the Germans hostage, whereby the Germans would be the only ones that would be a significant change to that and would actually, the rest of Europe may even follow, given the fact that Germany is one of the most powerful nations in the European Union. Now, that being said as well, unfortunately, when it comes to the United Kingdom and France, they make up a good portion of the European Union, obviously, with the United Kingdom threatening to pull out with Brexit. That makes a big change as well. But at the end of the day, you have to look at old alliances. The alliances between the French and the Americans and the British, ever since the Spanish-American War, have been extremely strong, and they have worked in tandem to conduct economic warfare, not only against, unfortunately, the British Empire, what they've done around the world, but absolutely the Americans in tandem in the European wars, World War I and World War II. There was quite a divide in the United States between the aspects of supporting the United Kingdom versus supporting the German empires at the time. These particular divides were absolutely driven by the banking infrastructure in the United States. And I think, unfortunately, we're seeing a repeat of history whereby this economic warfare is being used extremely effectively against Iran and other nations in which the United Kingdom and France have allied with the United States in their really economic espionage and warfare.
Now, Scott, the governor of Central Bank of Iran saying that Instex needs to be financed by importing oil from Iran in order to ensure sustainable operation. And the solution, it says, is for Europe to open a long-term credit line for Iran to be later repaid through oil imports. It looks like to be a very feasible solution. Would Europe do that?
Well, I think the only reason that Europe might do that would be under a complete divide with the United States. Unfortunately, given the close ties and the tremendous amount of investment by the United States and NATO, you know, NATO is predominantly funded by the United States, I'd say 80% or more, given the fact that the United States spends so much money on their military-industrial complex. At the same time, the economics of the two countries, the two unions between the United States and the European Union, these economics are closely bound. You don't have to do a lot of research. If you just look at the GDPs of the NATO-aligned countries, the gross domestic products versus the personal income or the average income per individual are pretty much on par, aside from countries maybe like Qatar and Norway, which are much higher, but are on par with the rest of the NATO-aligned countries. When, in fact, you have any of the countries that are considered, let's say, aligned with the BRICS infrastructure economically, those countries are, in fact, half the amount of personal income or individual income versus their GDP on a populist basis. And this is very much controlled by the West. This is the way the West controls the economics in the non-conforming nations to the Western banking infrastructure. And let's be clear, this infrastructure is less than 250 years old and is highly, highly controlled by the Europeans and certainly have brought in the... And unfortunately, during the last economic downfall in the United States, the Japanese have actually gotten a table at the... they took Lehman Brothers' seat at the Federal Reserve in the United States. So there is a very strong economic infrastructure that basically controls the rest of the economies of the opposing nations. Now, at the end of the day, when you're talking about China, China is one of the most challenging nations from an economic perspective. Certainly India. India has chosen to play the middle on this. So I think in the end of the day, you're going to see China, India, and Russia creating, obviously under BRICS, creating a different type of opposition to the economics. And if Germany decides to join something like that and participate, you will see many other European nations joining that particular reign.
Yeah, right. All right, Scott, we had this technical glitch that we tried to solve, and now on the phone we have journalist and political commentator Maxine Dover joining us from New York. So let me ask her a couple of questions. I'll get back to you. Maxine, considering another aspect of INSTEX, Foreign Minister Zarif says that a European side of the nuclear deal initiating INSTEX doesn't meet Iran's demands by doing that, yet it has a strategic value, indicating the fact that the closest allies of the United States are distancing themselves from America in their economic relations, which will have long-term effects. Let's have your take on that.
The long-term effect has to be well considered, and the idea of the European nations dividing from the American interests is probably quite far-fetched. The long-term interest of Iran, I think, would be far better served to find a negotiated way to first help its people by working with the nations who assist its economy to make the GDP for its people a better and more comfortable living standard. And I think a lot of it does come down to the economics. Mentioning China was a very challenging point. China is at this point vaguely number two, almost number one in the world economy, and in the next decade is likely to take the prime place. Mm-hmm. And with that and China's development of the New Silk Road initiative, the balances in dollars are going dollars and in yen are going to change dramatically in the next decade. I think Iran would be well advised to work within a civil framework rather than a threatening framework of nuclear destruction, to look for construction, to look for development of not only its infrastructure, but of international infrastructure in which it could participate.
Maxine, on what ground are you talking about nuclear destruction? Iran is not allowed, even if it wants to actually proliferate nuclear weapons. Islam, the major religion in Iran, does not allow, and the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Khamenei, also has issued a decree on that. We're not allowed to produce any nukes, so what destruction are we talking about?
Well, I think that that's a very fine tenet of Islam, and I hope that the other religions and other philosophies of the world will follow suit. The idea of destruction is something that we all should have learned about in the Tower of Babel way back in those days. It doesn't work when one nation attempts to destroy another. We all end up in a rather significantly difficult position. If the deal or the tenets of the deal. I think if we stopped calling it the deal and started looking at the components of an economic and civil arrangement, we all might be in better position. The idea of working, again, I'll go back to the idea of international economics being a controlling factor. That's where we should all of us should be looking.
Now, Maxine, a U.S. National Security Advisor John Bolton has urged Iran not to leave the nuclear deal, the JCPOA. How can the U.S. tell Iran to stay in a deal that's already left?
Well, John Bolton lives in very much in a world of his own understanding. He is a very personable fellow and across the dinner table, but he has a very interesting take on international politics. How he can tell Iran to stay in the deal when the United States, which is his positioning, has left is well beyond me as a journalist.
Now let me go to Scott. A former German foreign minister, Joschka Fischer, has said in an article that Trump's Iran strategy is lose-lose. Fischer says that Trump and his advisors are risking yet another catastrophic war in the Middle East region. Is that what the U.S. is seeking?
Yes, absolutely. Since Wesley Clark has said nearly 10 years ago, the United States at the Pentagon and the CIA, they had plans to not only attack Libya, Sudan, obviously Syria, Yemen, they also had plans to attack Iraq and Iran. Obviously not in that order, and certainly Iran was on the list and has turned out to be the last on the list. And certainly, unfortunately, the U.S. policy has proven that they've been incredibly anti-Iranian. Certainly when you talk about a country when the Iranians have been tremendously cooperative. Maxine talks about not cooperating with foreign nations. We've never seen a nation more cooperative. The JCPOA was absolutely more cooperative than the SALT I and the SALT II treaties put together by Rose Gottmuller with the Russians. So this was one of the most effective and one of the most definitive nuclear agreements, and actually one of the most restrictive nuclear agreements in the history of the world. And the Iranians are cooperative magnificently. The unfortunate scenario is the Americans have broken yet another treaty in which many people won't call this a treaty, let's just call it an agreement, but they've broken another agreement with an individual or a country or a nation in which they have done, unfortunately, over many years. They did it with the American Native Indians, and they've done it, obviously, around the world in other countries in which the United States has dominated not only the political infrastructure there, but the militaries there. Just look at Hawaii. Hawaii is a fantastic example of the United States taking hostage an entire culture and taking over their nation. This has been, unfortunately, a horrible scar on the American history, but at the same time, it's nothing that is old history. It's continuing today, and it continues today not only with Iran, but also, unfortunately, with Iraq, with Yemen, with Libya, with Syria, and elsewhere. We've seen tremendous amounts of military-industrial complex warfare in these areas, and the Americans have been extremely responsible for the destruction and death in these areas.
Now, Maxine, there is another aspect to this, and the United States imposed sanctions on Iran right after unilaterally exiting the JCPOA some 13 months ago. Now, under the deal, Tehran should export the extra low-enriched uranium, but it's been unable to do so because of U.S. sanctions. So Iran has not been able to comply with part of the agreement thanks to the U.S. obstructionism.
And the question is?
And the question, what is it that the U.S. wants Iran to do exactly? Comply with the deal? Sanctions don't allow that.
You know, we'll let go back to your comment about John Bolton. The idea of causing things to occur when they are not allowed is something of an impossibility. Am I hearing you?
Yes, go ahead, please.
the idea that that okay, the idea that one can limit by regulation actions that are already regulated, that is to say, the export of the excess production, which is now not allowed because of additional sanctions, becomes a ridiculous circle. It's the kind of situation that is without an answer. Either a special outlet has to be created so that any excess, if Iran cares to stay within the parameters of the deal, so that any excess can be exported in the agreed manner, then those negotiations need to start now and immediately. And if the idea is to punish Iran for having too much nuclear material but not allowing you to export it, this is a fool's dream.
Okay, Scott, you're shaking your head. Go ahead with your comments.
So let's be clear about the punishment of Iran. The punishment of Iran started in 1979. The punishment of Iran also initiated by the Americans in 1953 with the overthrow of Mossadegh. This has been a punishment that Iran has been under for over almost nearly 70 years. So let's talk about the punishment of Iran. Iran has been extremely under Western collusion and Western domination economically. I've said this many times on this program. In 1990 alone, the economy in Iran was well over $400 billion. An economy in Saudi Arabia was somewhere just over $100 billion. Now Saudi Arabia is $700 billion GDP, when in fact Iran is under $400 billion. So those constraints economically put by the West on Iran have been tremendous punishment, whereby their economy would be seven times, we're talking over $2.5 trillion in a country of 75 million people. Just imagine the this flourishing economy that would be there had it not been for Western based sanctions that have been punishment since 1979 alone, and an unfortunate dominance by the Americans under the Shah since the early 50s. So this is no one has received more punishment than Iran in modern times. So let's be clear about the real punishment that the Iran has endured and showed incredible constraint and showed incredible diplomacy.
All right, unfortunately, we are out of time and we should stop it at this point. So let me thank our guests, we have journalist and political commentator Maxine Dover from New York and former American intelligence linguist Scott Rickert from Tampa, Florida. Thank you for watching this program. We'll see you next time.